So high it looked like she'd tip over and fall backward, she jumped. She fractured her ankle in three places. I had to carry her back to the Buick and drive her to the hospital. I called her mom at least 7 times, but she never even picked up the phone. My mom answered on the first ring. "I'd prefer not to end up in the emergency room tonight," I say, leaning my head on Shayna's shoulder. "Maybe this adventure can end with food?" "Man cannot live on bread alone, Casey," she says. "What about pancakes? I'm pretty sure man can live on pancakes." A rat scurries across the alley, its pink tail whipping behind it. It freezes in the middle of the street and stares at us with red eyes. "Holy shit!" I take a quick step back. Aya screams and stumbles over her feet. Julie bursts out laughing but grabs Aya's arm so she doesn't fall. The rat twitches its nose. I flinch. I imagine it darting toward us, snapping its long, sharp teeth. But it creeps along the curb and out of sight instead. I sigh in relief. Shayna takes a swig of Jack Daniels. "It's just a rat, guys," she says, tucking the bottle back into her pocket. "It's disgusting," Aya mutters. Julie kicks a soda can into the shadows where the rat disappeared, and something darts across the pavement. Aya releases another high-pitched shriek, and Julie laughs even harder. Suddenly, Lawrence stops walking. He, Sam, and Woody crouch down in the street. "This is it!" Woody shouts, wiping the dirt off a manhole cover. The rest of us crowd around him. "Feel that?" Lawrence asks. Music vibrates through the ground, making the street hum. "Cool," I say, crouching next to Sam. I'm close enough that I can smell him. The combination of soap and pine needles. The manhole cover is made of iron, with the City of New York logo stamped over the center. Someone has painted a neon pink X over it. Woody digs his fingers around the sides of the cover and yanks. "Are you sure that's the right?" Julie starts. But she lets the end of her sentence trail off when Woody grunts and shoves the cover to the side of the hole. "X marks the spot," he says, wiping his hands off in his costume. Shayna grabs my arm and jumps up and down, squealing. Together, we all peer into the darkness. A rickety metal ladder descends into the black. Far below, I can just make out flickering candlelight and hear the distant sound of drumming. Something drips against the bottom of the tunnel, and the sound echoes toward us. "Well," Sam says, leaning back on his heels. "Who wants to go first?" 6. I lower myself down the ladder. The rungs chill my fingers, even though the day's heat still lingers in the air. "Gross," I say. "It smells like fish." "It's an adventure." Julie climbs onto the ladder above me. Her Doc Martens combat boots clank on the rungs, making the entire ladder tremble. She got the boots from her mom, who was way into grunge in the 90s, and had written Pearl Jam rules across the leather in silver Sharpie. "Adventures aren't supposed to be clean." "That's the weirdest thing you've ever said," Aya mutters. She crawls into the opening next, carefully placing one blackened foot onto the ladder's rungs. "You didn't care about being smelly when you were playing Queen of Garbage earlier," I say. Julie pokes Aya's foot and snickers. Aya tries to kick her. "Hey, stop shaking the ladder," she says. A nervous laugh bubbles up in my throat. "We're kind of high up, and this thing doesn't exactly feel steady." I glance down, but I can't see past Shayna's blonde head. My leather flat slips from my heel, and I curl my toes to keep it from falling. "Don't tell me you're scared," Shayna's voice echoes up from below me. I tighten my grip on the ladder rungs, feeling dizzy. I never get scared, I shoot back. Something icy and cold slithers down the back of my shirt. I shriek, nearly losing my grip on the ladder. My shoe slips off my foot and spirals into the darkness. Shayna cackles. Yeah, you're a badass. I rock back and forth to make the ladder jiggle. Shayna screams with laughter and hugs herself to the rungs. Shit, she shouts. I take it back. Don't do that again. I laugh as we climb deeper underground, and the subway tunnel slowly comes into focus. A giant laughing clown face stretches across one wall, orange spray paint dripping down the tile. Candles flicker on the ground. Distant music echoes through the tunnel and pulses up from the floor, making the wicks tremble. Excitement floods through me. I can already hear voices and laughter coming from deeper in the tunnel. It sounds like the party's in full swing. I lower my foot and my toes hit wet concrete. Chills shoot up my leg. Ew, I giggle, bouncing on one foot. We've reached a narrow platform overlooking a single row of grimy train tracks. A water-stained poster reads, "Surface Changes." I flatten the edge of the paper, but it's too faded to read. That's hella old, Woody explains, stepping up behind me. These tunnels have been closed since Hurricane Sandy. Creepy, I say, and another thrill of excitement shoots through me. I turn, still balanced on one foot. Has anyone seen my shoe? This it? Sam holds up my shoe, turning it so the candlelight catches the studs on the toe. Even in the dark, I see the little dimple in his cheek. Yeah, I say. I clear my throat, annoyed at how breathless and girly I sound. Catch. He tosses me the shoe, and I awkwardly lunge to catch it. Thanks, I say, slipping my shoe back on. Sam gives me a thumbs up. I'm not entirely sure how to respond to a thumbs up from the only boy I've ever loved, so I just nod. Aw, it's like an incredibly awkward Cinderella, Shayna says. She pulls another cigarette out of the pack of Jarum Blacks that she steals from her corner market and strikes a match. The blue-orange flame flickers over her pale skin and pink-tipped hair. Silvery smoke snakes around her. Does that make you my evil stepsister? I say, once Sam's too far away to hear. Are you kidding? I'm your fairy godmother. Shayna winks and taps her cigarette, sending a shower of orange sparks to the ground. What does that mean? I ask. You'll see. She squeezes my shoulder, then hurries up to walk with Woody and Sam. I lag behind, turning the comment over in my head. Shayna is like a firecracker, bright and sparkly and fun, but if you set her off in the wrong direction, she'll light everything on fire. The platform stretches for another 100 feet before ending at a white and green tiled wall. A staircase cuts through the middle of the concrete, leading deeper underground. Where now? I ask, peering down the stairs. Particle board and 2x4s seal off the door below, and caution tape winds around the handrails. This place is a freaking maze. I wonder how deep it goes. Woody hops off the platform, motioning for us to follow him down onto the tracks. Sam climbs down next. I hesitate, looking at Julie, Aya, and Shayna. Let's do this, Shayna says, jumping into the tunnel. Three rusty train rails cut down the center, surrounded by red Solo cups, empty PBR cans, and Snickers wrappers. Rows of thick white candles line the walls. The steady bump, bump, bump of techno music echoes toward us. I can't help bouncing a little as I walk. I want to dance. Is it true what they say about the third rail? Aya asks, hopping down next to me.
You mean, is it electrified?
Woody picks up a plastic cup and tosses it at the far rail. It rolls away, unharmed. They turned the power off, remember? Julie says. Because of the hurricane?
Whatever.
Woody kicks another plastic cup at the rail. I wrap my arms around my chest, shivering. Party sounds seep up through the floor and ooze out of the walls, reverberating through the soles of my shoes. The ground trembles with music. We turn the corner, and the tunnel opens into an underground station with an arched ceiling and graffiti-covered walls. People crowd on top of a concrete platform, waving yellow and pink glow sticks that leave trails of light as they dance. Two lanes of subway tracks stretch past the platform on both sides before disappearing into dark tunnels, just like the one we've come out of. Strobe lights flash from the ceiling, and hundreds of candles line the walls, dripping pools of white wax.
Wow.
Julie runs a hand through her hair, sweeping the black curls off her face. It's like Christmas, but for ravers.
Ravemas,
Aya adds, giggling. She tugs off her cardigan, revealing the plunging neckline on her 50s-style dress. She folds the sweater into a tiny square and forces it into her pink faux fur clutch. She wobbles toward the party, once again balancing on her painful-looking heels.
How long before she finds the newest love of her life? Julie asks, twisting the onyx ring on her finger.
Maybe she'll find someone great tonight, I say. Aya's always looking for her next epic romance. Julie gives her shit, but I can't help rooting for her. I steal a glance at Sam, heading down the tunnel.
You think there's a VIP room in this place? Shayna asks, taking a puff from her cigarette.
Like where the celebs hang out? I ask.
Shayna shrugs and leans her head back, trying to blow smoke circles.
This is New York, she says, winking at me.
I lean forward, peering down the tunnel that leads to the entrance.
Maybe it's back this way.
I start down the tunnel, but a bouncer cuts me off before I can go any farther. He has the kind of face that looks like it doesn't know how to smile.
No one leaves Survive the Night until the party's over, the bouncer says.
He hooks his thumbs into his jeans pockets and stands up straighter. He must be more than 6 feet tall. I glance at Shayna.
We're just looking for a bathroom, she finishes for me.
Party's not over till 5,
the bouncer says.
Come on, Shayna says, pulling me back into the party.
That was weird, I say. We're trapped down here until 5 in the morning? Don't you think that's
cool?
Shayna stomps out her cigarette.
I was going to say strange.
I check over my shoulder again. The bouncer leans against the wall next to the tunnel, waiting for anyone else who might try to slip back to the entrance.
Shayna, we have to drive back before Madison's sleepover gets out, or my parents will know I bailed.
It takes 2 hours to get back, Shayna says.
You'll be fine.
But if there's traffic?
At 5 in the morning?
Shayna picks at the nail polish on her thumb. I'm going to find us something to drink, she says, letting a black flake flutter to the ground.
Think you can try to relax until I get back?
Yeah, of course, I say, a little embarrassed that I'm getting so worked up. Shayna veers off to the drink line, while I scramble onto the platform to look for Julie and Aya. Narrow ledges jut out from the wall above me. A girl with pigtails sits on one of them, spray painting a face on the concrete. I ease past a group of people playing spin the bottle and try to make my way toward the dancers on the far end. The platform's so crowded, I can barely move. I'm about to give up and follow Shayna to the drink line, when I stumble over a pair of Converse sneakers and balled-up socks.
Left foot green,
someone shouts. I push past a line of people and see another, smaller group. It looks like they're wrestling. Paint coats their hands and feet and drips from their clothes. Messy puddles of red, yellow, blue, and green cover the concrete and ooze together, making the floor look like a Jackson Pollock painting.
Right hand, blue.
Everyone scrambles around to find the blue paint puddles. Giggles erupt as their hands slip out from under them. A few people lose their balance and fall. I grin as I watch them play, thinking back to the party where I met Sam. I kept waiting for him to come inside so I could make an excuse to talk to him, but he spent most of the night in the yard with his lawnmower. Then, about halfway through the party, I saw him slip through the front door and sneak upstairs. I found him alone in an office on the second floor.
I was looking for an extra bathroom, he told me.
But when I promised I wouldn't rat him out, he admitted he was actually snooping.
Check this out, he had said.
He stepped aside, revealing a floor-to-ceiling bookcase completely stocked with old board games. They had everything. Jenga, Trivial Pursuit, Life, Monopoly, Sorry, you name it. My mouth dropped open when I saw it. I didn't realize people owned board games anymore. I hadn't seen so many in one place in my entire life. I threw a hand over my eyes. Whatever game I point to is the one we're going to play, I'd said. He laughed while I made a big show of waving my hand over the row of games before dropping it on an old Twister box.
I don't think you can manage Twister, Sam said,
nodding at the bulky knee brace I had to wear after my accident. Rain check, I'd told him. He found a piece of paper and scribbled, I owe you one game of Twister on it, along with his phone number. I can't help remembering that moment now, as I watch this much messier game of Twister. I swivel around, trying to find Sam in the crowd. I know things have been weird between us, but an IOU is an IOU. He owes me a game.
Right foot blue,
the announcer shouts. I grin as the players weave and duck around one another, and people lose their balance and tumble to the floor. I finally spot Sam a few feet away. He slides his bare foot onto a blue puddle, a streak of red paint smudged across his face. The smile freezes on my lips. He's already playing. Without me. The announcer shouts something else, but his voice sounds like static. A girl leans over and whispers something in Sam's ear. She's beautiful and blonde and wearing a shirt that's so short and tight, it's practically non-existent. Sam laughs and touches her bare shoulder. The hurt burns inside me, turning to fury. I push through the crowd to get to the game, shedding my shoes as I go. Sam freezes when he sees me, his hand hovering above a goopy blue pile of paint. Oh, hey, I say, flashing him my sexiest smile. I didn't see you playing. The blonde girl glares at me, and I very maturely stick out my tongue when Sam turns his head.
Right hand green,
the announcer calls. Sam slides his hand onto the same green blob I'm aiming for, and his thumb brushes against mine. I glance up at him. A blush colors his cheeks, and he jerks his hand away.
Sorry, he mutters.
I grin and flick a little red paint at him. It splatters across his hair.
Sorry,
I say, biting my lip to keep from laughing. Sam cocks an eyebrow.
You're going down,
he says, wiping paint from his face.
Left foot red,
the announcer shouts. I plop my foot down, and red paint oozes between my toes. It feels cold and slimy,
I try not to make a face, but I can't help scrunching my nose up in disgust.
Ew,
I say. Sam lowers his foot to a red puddle behind me.
Left hand yellow!
The blonde girl hip checks me, nearly sending me down. My knee twists, and pain flutters through my leg. Sam grabs my shoulder to hold me up. I regain my balance, and he pulls his hand back.
Right foot red!
This time, Sam starts to stumble. He grabs my shoulder for support, and suddenly we're practically nose to nose.
Hey, he says. You have a little...
He brushes something off my cheek. I hold my breath. A smile flickers onto his lips.
So, I was trying to wipe away a dot of yellow paint, he explains. And I accidentally smeared green paint all over your face.
Loser. I push my hand into his face, leaving a bright blue handprint on his cheek. He laughs and dunks his hand back down in the red paint. I dodge backward, but I lose my balance. I grab Sam's sweatshirt, pulling him into the paint with me. I hit the ground with a thud, and Sam lands on top of me.
You and you,
the announcer calls, pointing to us.
You're out.
We're out,
Sam says. He pushes himself onto his elbow, but doesn't move right away. Instead, he stares down at me. My breath catches. He's so close. He could kiss me. I want him to kiss me. Finally, he clears his throat and pushes himself away. He reaches for my hand to help me up.
Good game, he says with a smile.
7. Sam pulls me to my feet.
We're a mess, he says.
I try to laugh, but it sounds hollow. Blue paint drips from Sam's t-shirt and stains his jeans. I lift my hand to wipe a smudge of yellow off his chin, but Sam clears his throat and looks over his shoulder before I can touch him. Frowning, I let my arm drop back to my side. I glance down at myself instead. Red and green handprints cover my black t-shirt and jeans, and there's blue paint splattered over my feet.
Think there's somewhere we can clean up? Sam asks.
Don't think you're going to find a bathroom down here. I wipe my paint-covered hands on my jeans, but there's nothing I can do about my feet. I slip them into my flats, leaving blue smudges on the leather.
Come on, Sam says, nodding at a keg sitting in the corner. Let's find something to drink.
I hesitate. Beer's probably not a good idea. For me, at least.
Water, then.
A real smile crosses his face, crinkling the corners of his eyes. It's enough to calm the butterflies in my gut. Sam grabs his sneakers and takes my hand, pulling me into the crowd. His skin feels chalky from the dried paint and a little sweaty. I don't want him to let go, but he releases his grip when we shuffle to the end of the drinks line.
Isn't that Shayna?
He says, nodding at a blonde head in the crowd around the keg. I cup my hands around my mouth.
Shayna!
I call, and she whips around, holding two bright red Solo cups.
Hey, I was looking for you two, she says.
She hands me a Solo cup.
It's soda, she says when I make a face. Don't get your panties in a twist.
Yum, I say, taking a sip. This is perfect. Thanks. Shayna shifts her eyes to Sam.
Woody was looking for you, she says. He found some guys who want a jam. You in?
Sam glances at me.
I didn't bring my guitar.
They had stuff, Shayna says.
Sure.
Sam crosses his arms over his chest.
You coming? he asks. He stares at my chin instead of meeting my eyes. Yeah. I bite my lip to keep from frowning. Shayna grabs Sam's arm. Here, let me show you where they're all set up, she says, and pulls him into the crowd. Wait, didn't you want a drink? I shout. Sam turns and lifts a hand to his ear, frowning. Didn't you? I start again, but he shakes his head to show that he can't hear me over the music. Never mind, I mutter, tagging along after them. We hop off the platform and follow the tunnels deeper underground. Shayna balances on one of the thick rails, holding her arms out to either side. Why don't people run off to join the circus anymore? She wobbles but catches herself before she loses her balance. Beer sloshes over the rim of her solo cup. I'd be insane on the tightrope. You just want an excuse to wear a sparkly leotard. I avert my eyes as we walk past a couple making out by the side of the tracks. Shayna spins on her rail. I'd look great in a leotard, she says. She wobbles again. I grab for her arm, but Sam reaches her first. He holds her elbow until she regains her balance. I grit my teeth and kick an empty PBR can. It ricochets off a rusted rail and rolls to a stop in front of a silver subway car. Graffiti covers the windows, making it impossible to see inside. Woody's voice echoes down the tunnel, screeching the words to a popular Feelings Are Enough song. Sam pulls himself onto the platform, then leans over to offer me a hand. Thanks, I say, hopping up next to him. A dull ache shoots through my knee. I wince and scramble to my feet, trying to stretch my leg as we walk. We join a line of people trying to push through the narrow subway car door. The car is tiny, but 100 people are jammed inside. Orange and pink glow-in-the-dark necklaces glimmer from their necks and wrists, and they wave glow sticks above their heads. A thick cloud of marijuana smoke gathers at the top of the subway car. Are you ready for some music? Woody yells. If I squint, I can see him standing on a cracked yellow seat in the middle of the car. A faded subway map stretches across the wall behind him. Woody's gone full cow, with the costume zipped over his chest and a plastic nose strapped over his real one. A black and white tail swings between his legs, and he has 15 glowy pink necklaces dangling from his neck. The crowd cheers. I spot Aya, wrapped around a silver pole in the middle of the car, pumping her fists in the air. Wispy black strands of hair hang in front of her face. I search for Julie's bushy curls, but I don't see her. Come on! Shayna shouts over the cheering. She and Sam duck through the wall of people and disappear into the smoky car. I try to follow, but another jab of pain shoots through my knee. Grimacing, I step out of the doorway and lean against a graffiti-covered window. I squint through the glass, watching Sam wade through the crowd and crawl into the seat next to Woody. Someone hands him a guitar, and he ducks his head to play. Disappointment rolls through me. I thought I felt something shift when we were playing Twister, but Sam doesn't even scan the crowd to see if I'm watching. I sigh and make my way farther down the platform to look for Julie instead. I refuse to be the girl who hangs around her ex-boyfriend when he obviously doesn't want her there. It's better that I give him a chance to miss me. Julie's thick curls usually make her pretty easy to find, but it's so crowded down here that I can barely see 2 feet in front of me. I push my way through the partiers, wondering if she found a bathroom to hide in, like she did the night she came with Shayna and me to the rave at the pool. She spent the entire night huddled in the back of the handicapped stall. Learn the secrets of your future. Only a nickel, she had said, when Shayna and I finally came to find her.
A lit joint was balanced on her knee. I dug a nickel out of my pocket and handed it to her.
"Your aura's yellow," she said, sliding the nickel into her combat boot. "It means you're cheerful and good-natured, but easily led astray."
"That's not the future," I pointed out. Julie picked up her joint with two fingers.
"Your good nature will lead you to love," she said. "And love will lead you to danger."
A toilet flushed, and Shayna threw open her stall door. The hard plastic slapped against the wall.
"You're cracked, Jules," she said, switching on a faucet. "Sam's a Boy Scout. No danger there."
Julie leveled her eyes at Shayna. She took a puff off her joint, and smoke curled up toward the ceiling.
"There are many different kinds of love," she said.
Techno music blasts from a set of wireless speakers, sending a deep unts, unts, trembling through the ground. I think I see someone with dark, bushy hair, and I grab her arm. But when she turns around, I see that it's really a he, and his hair is actually a fake-looking wig.
"You're pretty," someone shouts.
I turn, and a skeletally thin boy wearing goth makeup grabs my hand and pulls me into the crowd.
"Whoa,"
I say, stumbling after him. He yanks me toward a thick group of gyrating people and grabs my hips. For a second, I consider dancing with him. I even sneak a glance over my shoulder to see whether Sam's watching through the subway car window. Then I realize what I'm doing and pull away, disgusted with myself.
"No thanks," I say, untangling myself from goth boy's arms.
I am not that desperate. I take another drink of soda. It's warm now, but the air is so muggy down here that I don't mind. Everyone's sticky and sweaty and way, way too close. A sparkler crackles to life a few feet away, and people around me whoop and cheer. I wince, imagining a spark landing on my bare arm. I duck away before someone else can force me to dance. The crowd thins out farther down the platform. I move around a boarded-off staircase and crouch beside the subway car to catch my breath. Candles sit along the steps in front of me, held in place with pools of sticky wax. I lean against the cool metal subway car and take another swig of soda, wishing I'd asked Shayna for a little whiskey. At least then I'd be having fun. Someone sniffles, quietly at first, and then louder. It almost sounds like a sob. I stand and peek into the subway car behind me. It's so dark that it takes a second for my eyes to adjust to the light. Two kids huddle against the far door, looking down at something in their hands. I squint and move closer. A lighter sparks. The flame illuminates a kid with long, stringy hair. White powder crackles from the spoon he holds with trembling fingers. Shock roots my feet to the ground. Smoke floats lazily toward the top of the subway car. I curl my fingers around the subway door and inhale the sweet, smoky scent. Everything in me wants to crawl into that tiny car and breathe in. Deep. I can almost feel the drugs clouding my brain. I stumble back so quickly that I slam into the staircase. Smoke drifts toward me, beckoning. I clench my eyes shut, my head throbbing. I fumble for my purse, then freeze, remembering that Shayna took my Tylenol. Suddenly, the dancing and cheering feels like an assault. The air in these tunnels is too thin. I gulp down mouthful after mouthful and still feel like I can't breathe. A dull ache flickers through my skull. I grit my teeth together
and press my fingers against my temples. I stumble forward, and Goth Boy's there again, grabbing for my arm.
"Hey, beautiful," he starts.
I pull away, trying to move around him, but I stumble, and then I'm next to the wall, my face pressed against the smooth, cold bricks. Lights and colors and music pound around me.
"Hey," Goth Boy says. "Are you okay?"
"Water," I murmur.
The ground lurches beneath me. I stumble, smacking my shoulder against the wall. I try to push myself away from the wall, but the tile is warm to the touch, and the heat seeps into my fingers. I can't move my hand. It feels like I've plunged it into a pool of tar. Goth Boy disappears, but I don't know whether he's really going to get me water or not. Black spots appear before my eyes. I take another drink of soda, surprised to find the cup nearly empty. I feel woozy. I want to sit down, but there's nowhere to sit.
"Casey?"
I blink several times, and then Shayna is there. Thank God. Her pink hair looks even pinker, if that's possible. And it's so beautiful and so perfect that I want to bury my face in it. I reach for her, but she's too far away, and my fingers just close around air.
"Whoa, you don't look so good," Shayna says.
But she's smiling. Why is she smiling? "I don't know what's happening," I say. My words slide together. "I feel so
high," I think but don't say.
I can't be high. The only drug I've had tonight is caffeine.
"I'm your fairy godmother."
I remember Shayna puffing on her cigarette, a mischievous look in her eye. I glance down at my cup. The cup Shayna gave me. The last sip of liquid rolls around on the bottom. "What did you do?" I ask. I blink and my cup splits into two. Shayna giggles.
"I'm helping you relax," she says, clamping a hand down on my shoulder.
"You should thank me."
The two cups merge back into one again, but it's too big now. I don't know how to hold it. "You drugged me," I say. My voice sounds very far away. Shayna presses my bottle of Tylenol into my hand. My fingers curl around it automatically.
"You're welcome," she whispers.
8. Shayna visited me every day after my knee surgery. My soccer friends were busy with practice and games, and I could hardly get out of bed. But Shayna always brought me a present, a packet of watermelon pop rocks, a trashy tabloid magazine, a bag filled with tiny rubber dinosaurs. She'd hang out in my room for hours, watching terrible reality television and making up dirty limericks to scribble onto my cast. A week after I got home, Shayna plucked the orange pill bottle off my bedside table and rattled it at me.
"Can I have one of these?" she asked.
"Why?" I frowned down at the wooden letters sitting in front of me. We were in the middle of a game of Scrabble.
"They're just pain meds."
Shayna laughed and popped the bottle open, dumping the white pills into her palm.
"They're not just for pain," she said, tossing two into her mouth. "They can be for fun, too."
"Shayna," I reach for my friend's hand, but it vanishes, leaving me grasping at air. "What did you give me?"
"Let's call it your glass slipper."
Shayna's voice is in my ear, and then it's gone.
She's gone. I turn and stumble forward, catching myself against the tunnel wall. I want to go home. I picture myself burrowing into my bed and pulling my familiar blue and purple paisley print blanket over my face. I can practically feel the pillow beneath my cheek. My eyes drift closed, and I lean against the wall of the tunnel, breathing deep. Home is so far away. I feel the distance suddenly, like a great cavernous space. I miss my blanket and my pillow so badly my chest aches. I wish I were in bed now. I wish I were far away from all of this. I push myself away from the wall, trying to ignore the churning feeling in my stomach. The colors around me switch places, and a film of sweat gathers on my lower back, just above my jeans. I think I'm going to vomit, but I just double over, gasping for breath. When I straighten again, it feels like every person in the party has taken several steps closer to me. The flashing strobe lights distort their faces. Their skin melts from their skulls like popsicles in the sun. A blonde girl wearing blue eyeshadow turns to me, skin dripping from her cheekbones. Her eye sockets sag, then cave in on themselves, tearing the rest of her face down into the depths of the black. I lurch forward, grasping for the girl's face, but my hands close only on air. I inhale, trying to calm myself down, but the air tastes like fish and rot and something else, something sweet and familiar that makes me gag. I need to get out of here. The air's too thick. I can't breathe. I stumble toward the tunnel we all came down together. I see the entrance and hurry toward it, but the bouncer steps out of the shadows, blocking my way. I blink up at him. His torso dwarfs my entire body. And his head. His head doesn't look human. Thick, dark hair covers his cheeks and sprouts from his eyebrows. Then the hair starts to grow. It comes in faster and faster until it covers the man's entire face. I narrow my eyes. It's not hair. It's fur. Small, dark eyes stare out from beneath the fur. They're predatory. Like a bear's. "Oh my God," I whisper, trembling. A snout juts out from the man's face, where his nose should be. He peels his lips back, displaying teeth the length of kitchen knives. He's becoming the bear.
"No one leaves," the bear says. Drool drips from his teeth.
I cower, horrified, and tears form at the corners of my eyes. I turn and race back to the party before skin starts melting from the bear's face. Elbows jab into my sides, and voices echo around me. I almost walk into a girl with long, silky black hair and perfect skin.
"Don't be stupid," she's saying to her friend, a curvy girl with dark skin and a wild afro of hair.
"No, it's completely true," the girl with the afro says. "Mark told me there's this homeless guy who lives in the tunnels, and he's murdering all the hipsters coming down to party."
Let me guess, this killer has a hook for a hand? Oh, and I bet he escaped from a mental hospital at the edge of town.
"I'm serious. Some guy disappeared during the last rave. It was on the news and everything. Mark said they hushed up the part about it being a murder. But he was there. They never found his body either. So it's probably still down here, rotting."
The girls drop their voices to continue talking, and I can't hear them over the roar of the crowd anymore. I press my hands over my ears and squeeze my eyes shut, wishing I could melt into the ground. Everything's too loud, too close. Glow sticks blur through the darkness beyond my closed eyelids, and a strobe light flashes in the corner. The lights ooze and twist together, making my head spin. I stumble past the subway platform and down the train tunnel. Only then do I open my eyes again. I'm alone. Finally, I collapse against the cool brick wall and breathe in deep. That sweet smell still lingers in the air, just beneath the rot of the sewer. I look around, trying to figure out exactly where I am. The floor rises and falls beneath me, like it's breathing. A line of candles twists down the shadowy tunnel. Their light flickers over old subway tracks and travels up the walls around me. I move deeper into the tunnel. Laughter and music still echo from the main party, making my head pound. I follow the tracks until the voices are just a murmur in the distance. Graffiti covers the bricks. "We're watching," one message reads in spiky green paint. Another says, "You're next." My drug-addled brain twists these words, making them look alive. They creep and move over the bricks. I blink, and the words go still. I wrap my arms around my chest, shivering. I know they'll start moving again as soon as I close my eyes. They're waiting for me to look away. And then, out of nowhere, I hear a thin, horrified scream. I step away from the wall. "Hello?" My voice booms around me, but I'm not sure if it's because I'm shouting or if the word echoes inside my own head. I make my way farther down the tunnel. The candle flames flicker gently, even though there's no wind. I fumble in my bag for my phone, but come up empty-handed. I swear under my breath. The shadows move. I stiffen. Rusty train tracks stretch ahead of me, then disappear into the black. The walls start to close in, but then I look at them, and they jerk back into place. Someone traced their initials into the dust coating the walls. MC plus RW forever. I press my hand against the cool tile to keep the walls from moving again. Lawrence, the homeless guy who led us here, lurches out of the tunnel. I stumble back, horrified. I hadn't realized he followed us down here. His dreadlocks writhe around his shoulders like snakes. One of them pulls away from his head and hisses at me. "Lawrence," I say, but the word gets stuck in my mouth. Lawrence's brilliant blue eyes seem to glow in the dark. Were they always blue? I seem to remember him having brown eyes, like warm coffee. He doesn't look at me as he walks down the tunnel, barefoot, the grocery bags tied to his feet long gone. I try again to find my voice. "Lawrence, I need to find..." Lawrence walks into me like I'm not there. I stumble backward, hitting my elbow against the wall. Pain shoots up my arm. "Watch it," I say. But I'm so high, it sounds more like, "Wah-uh." Lawrence keeps walking. His dreadlocks lie still, but there appears to be something on his back. It's long and hooked, the edges serrated like a knife. I watch as it shudders beneath his shoulder blades, then disappears, leaving only a bloody wound behind. "Oh, God," I whisper. My ankle twists beneath me, and then I'm on the ground, my cheek pressed against the damp, earth-covered concrete. My hand smacks into a lit candle, and it topples over, rolling deeper into the tunnel. It comes to rest near a pale hand. I scream. I push myself to my hands and knees and crawl backward. I expect the hand to grab at me and drag its fingernails across my face. I imagine the sharp points digging into my flesh. but the hand stays still. Lifeless. Dead. Someone's dead. Some guy died during the last rave, I think, remembering the conversation I overheard. They never found his body. It's down here somewhere, rotting. I close my eyes, and horror floods through me. I open them again, and the hand is gone. The candle flickers quietly, illuminating the dirt floor of the subway tunnel. I stare into the darkness until my eyes water, but I don't see anything. I blink, and the hand is back. A black onyx ring glitters from its finger. "Julie?" I whisper. No answer. My arms tremble beneath me, barely able to hold my weight. I crawl toward the hand. The candle sparks, then flickers out, leaving me in the dark. "Julie!" My voice cracks. I want to reach out and grab her hand to make sure it's still warm. Then I imagine it flipping onto its palm and crawling toward me like a spider. I run my fingers over the ground in front of me, but I feel only dirt and cold metal train tracks. I swing my bag off my shoulder and dig inside. The darkness presses in on me. Something brushes my arm and I scream. My bag slips from my hands and hits the ground. I grab for it and thrust my hand inside. My fingers bump up against my plastic cell phone case. I pull the phone out and switch the screen on. Light blinds me. I cringe and blink, waiting for the spots to clear from my eyes. My throat goes dry. I aim the light into the darkness. Julie's dark curls shroud her face and crawl across the ground like vines. My fingers tremble. I don't want to see anything else, but my hand moves on its own, lowering the phone's beam to illuminate the rest of her body. Dried blood stiffens the front of her flimsy tank top and jeans. Patches of the blood still look fresh, but the edges have hardened into a brown crust that flakes onto the ground and stains Julie's skin. Wet red pools line the area below her fingernails and gather around her knuckles. Vomit rises in my throat. I shake so badly, I can hardly hold my phone. I shift the light to Julie's stomach. A gaping wound opens up in the space below her ribs. Bits of bone poke through her shirt, glowing white in the shadows. It looks impossibly like someone carved out the middle of her body. Something shuffles and I flinch, moving my phone to illuminate a huge brown rat. Its red eyes reflect the light. It holds the tip of Julie's finger in its tiny pink paws and gnaws on it with sharp white teeth. 9. I scream for so long my throat burns. The rat drops Julie's finger and scurries deeper into the dark. "Julie!" I whisper hoarse. Julie doesn't move. Blood coats her arms and neck and forms a black pool beneath her head. Another rat creeps from the shadows and laps at the pool of blood. I cringe and look away. Something